All right, everybody, welcome, welcome. It is time for another Toolbox Tuesday.
Yeah, so I guess we're doing something a little bit different this time. So I'm kind of a little bit nervous, but let's get going.
We are changing it up. So if you have not been with us for a Toolbox Tuesday before, every Tuesday in our practices is Toolbox Tuesday. That is the theme of our huddles, where we pick one of the resources that we have available in our toolkit and we go over it with everyone to make sure that we're on the same page. And today we are launching our on-target tracking series. So our tool is STEM that we are going to be using today as an example. We wanted to do a little bit of an interview style to talk about how we started developing our on-target tracking, how we set our goals and our scorecards for our team. So STEM is our tool for today.
In
Just what he wanted to be.
more ways than one,
So first and foremost, STEM, I appreciate you being vulnerable and kind of giving us a behind the scenes take on how we develop some of these systems. All of the systems that we have came from a pain point that we were trying to solve in our own practices. It wasn't just something we Googled and pulled out of thin air. These were all from pain and suffering of years past. So just to start, just give us a little bit of background, Sten, if you can, of when you first started practicing solo. You had a partner originally, and then when you were to kind of find that partner out and taking over production yourself. So just kind of give us a little bit of background there.
Yeah, sure. So I practiced, my first year out at dental school, like a lot of people, was in pretty high volume. Let's say a clinic type atmosphere. It definitely was a group, but it was a lot of Medicare, a lot of HMO, turn and burn. I was, 1 week after getting my license, and I had three solid columns to run with one assistant and two hygienists. That was fun, and we made it work. And so we had two assistants. We had one sterilization, one chairside. But I learned a ton, and I knew the one thing I did learn is that's not the way I wanted to practice. And it was a means to an end, but it was kind of just get in there. And the goal that I set was just get as much experience as I could. And it was do as much as I could, learn as much as I could. I didn't want to make as many mistakes as I could, but I'd be okay with those mistakes as long as they were getting me towards my goal, or I was trying to do a good job, trying to do good dentistry, trying to run on time, trying to kind of practice my flow. And there's always mistakes. I mean, the first year out, it's mostly mistakes, right? So like it is with everyone. I basically woke up one day, called in sick, and interviewed a bunch of places up in Santa Barbara. And not proud of that, but it's definitely an inflection point in my career for sure. Not proud of the fact that I had to call in sick. But I did it. And so that's how I met my old partner. We were partners. I just knocked on his door, gave him a letter, and that's how it happened. It was as simple as that. We practiced together for about a year. After about 2 months, I told him I wanted to buy it, and he wasn't ready. And then after about 3 or 4 months, he could tell that I was probably going to take a hike if he didn't start making plans. And so that's kind of how that whole thing happened. We were 50-50 partners for, God, correct me if I'm wrong, Jennifer, but maybe a little over a year, a little under a year, maybe, and something like that. And I, right at that point, he basically decided he had another practice in a town about a couple hours away. And he was going to focus on that a little bit more, focus on the family. He definitely took a lot more time off. He was only practicing one, sometimes 2 days a week. I was basically running the practice. I was running the practice with bumpers, with guardrails on, right? He wasn't going to just let me have the reins, someone who's never run a practice before. But I definitely felt a little handcuffed very, very quickly. We did not, and I don't know, I still have not decided if this was the right way to do it or not. And I think it probably was not the right way to structure it, but we did not take a percentage of production. And the reason we did that was because we wanted, and I think this was very admirable of him, he did not want me to feel like, or either of us to feel like we were taking production away from either person. And I think that the whole goal was to kind of transfer goodwill towards me because I was going to end up buying the whole practice. We usually had it written in the contract. I think from that light, I think that was a great plan. It did not motivate me or him to produce. And I think that was probably, and that's obvious, right? And that's the reason we have the percentage of production type plans that's basically ubiquitous in the whole industry. But it definitely created a little bit more camaraderie. It definitely created a little bit more, it broke down the barriers for us to kind of discuss cases together and pass cases back and forth. I would see his crowns. He would pick up for a patient if I was running behind. You know, if there was an anterior case or a veneer case, he knew I wanted to get him to aesthetics at the time a little bit more. I was already, but you know, to another level, he would shift him over to me. You know, surgery cases, he would shift over to me, even though he could do it, things like that. So there definitely was a lot more back and forth because of that plan. I think the right structure would have been a little bit of a hybrid, in where there was definitely a per diem type structure like we did have, but it definitely gave us a little bit more of a carrot on a stick and more of an eat what you kill type thing. And I think that would have been the ideal way to practice. And I think the easy way to do that is just when you're partners, you have your percentage of production, then you have your profit at the end. We'll get into why we didn't do that in a second, but because there was no profit, and so we basically lived off our per diem, and that was just the way it goes, and live and learn. But that's kind of the way we structured it, but 9 months or 12 months later, I bought him out, and the rest is kind of the rest. So
as far as you having control over your production at that time, was he still leading the charge a little bit there, and you saw cases that he shifted your way, or, you know, were you able to kind of treatment plan at will, or how did that
still
work?
I definitely was. I mean, he did a very good job of kind of letting me do what I, you know, having autonomy, and he would, you know, introduce me to everyone. I would do, you know, I was working 4 or 5 days a week. He was working one, maybe two. And so just by the nature of that, I was seeing almost all the patients, right? Whether it was coming through hygiene, whether it was new patients coming in the door, which we were a fee-for-service practice back then, and we did not have a lot of new patients. So it was we had a very small back door and a very small front door too. So we just had small doors all the way around. But, it was the way the model was. And I looking back on it, I think it was a great way to kind of start out. I don't ever want to go back to that model, but, he did definitely gave me a lot of autonomy. There were some, like any time you're sharing cases or sharing patients, things like that, you're going to lock horns on a couple issues here and there. And, you know, I want to do this case. And I think the one that we probably, had a, a little bit of a tough time working out are the cases that I really wanted to do, because I was taking a little bit more of a, this is my learning time approach to it. And I wanted to get in there and do big cases, right? Because I knew I had a little bit of a safety net with him and having and things like that, and having a partner. And I was, I was not patient. Patience is not my virtue. And I wanted it now, and I wanted, I was going to COIS. I was going to all these big implant cases. I was doing all these courses. I wanted to get in there, and I wanted to do it now. Like, if I came home from a week long course, you better believe I was looking for rehab cases on Monday morning. And that was just the way it goes. We were a very, very pros heavy practice, very, very high end, big implant. I brought in the implants. He already had a fairly well established aesthetic program. And so we already had a lot of those cases, kind of built in. So it wasn't like I was drumming them up out of nowhere, but, he definitely gave me a lot of autonomy in that. And I think once he realized that I could swing, it became more and more. And, I think it kind of gave him a little bit of a idea about how this phase out might look. And so, it in those ways, it definitely worked out. It worked out well.
And did you to establish clear financial goals for the practices and your intern individual income goals working in this transition?
Absolutely not. I think that is the biggest downfall I think that we had was he had a goal of phasing out of the practice and I had a goal of phasing into the practice, and that's where it stopped. Right. And I think the it was more around our careers and where we were going with them, whether it was going out or in, and making money or growing the practice was not one of them. And I, I never thought this, but looking back, I you know, and I if I ever was even subconscious thinking this, I kind of regret it. But we were gonna we have to revalue the practice at the second bite at this at the second 50%. So if I grew up by 30, 40%, I'm essentially paying for that twice, right? I'm paying for the growth because I'm a business owner, and I'm paying for the price at the end. And so, you know, I don't think I don't remember ever thinking that I was holding back on production and I'm only going to focus on this, but that was just my nature at that point, is I just wanted to learn as much as I could, get as good as I can. And then when it's mine, I got all these big ideas and we're going to blow this thing out. And, you know, like everyone does, you know, you know, you want to have autonomy until you do, right? And I think, you know, I still like it. I never regret that, but it comes with a price. It comes with a cost in time. It comes with a cost in stress. And you know, it's just one of those things where you don't know what you don't know until you get into it. But you know, we never had conversations about finances. We never had conversations about personal finance goals, personal income goals, things like that. So I don't think that he ever did with he had a couple associates at his other practice too. I don't know that he ever had those with them as well either. I just don't know that it was built into the business model. Yeah.
So he's out now. We're fast forwarding in time a little bit. It's your name that's on the door, or the transitioning to your name being on the door. How did you think that initially was going to impact your individual income?
Oh, I mean, it's like everyone. Everyone graduates from dental school, and you know, everyone thinks that they're going to be handed the keys to the Beamer, you know, when they get their put their diploma down, right? And you know, that just doesn't happen unless your mommy daddy's gonna buy it for you. So it's, you know, you got to work for it. And again, even when I first bought it, we actually grew the practice by 30% that first year. So I did what I set out to do on the top end. But like a lot of young business owners, growth is expensive and you don't manage that expensive growth. And so you grow at all costs, not really caring how much it costs you to grow. And that was really, really detrimental because all of a sudden we had hugely climbing. I mean, our bonus was blown out and they're producing a ton. Our hygienists, our team, we're producing a ton. We're doing great. But we were not managing how we got there, right? And it was a little bit inefficient in a lot of ways. We had almost every week we had a full day meeting where I was paying the entire staff, where we're kind of getting new systems, new protocols in order. Jennifer, you probably remember that. You came in at the
First
time
days.
too. And we did that a little bit because I knew I had to create big things, and I wanted to have a team behind me, and they wanted to be behind me, and we really coalesced as a team in those meetings. What you don't realize as a young business owner initially is that those meetings are expensive, and people aren't going to show up on a Friday or Thursday for free, and nor should they. And I didn't expect them to, but things like that. I mean, we went on trips. We went to Chicago. We went to Seattle. We went to, you know, a lot of different places, and I was paying for it all. And you know, it's, you know, it just gets expensive, more and more expensive, and it didn't have to be. You know, I think there's certain things we could have cut along the way to manage that growth is always going to be expensive. There's no way around it, right? There's almost no way to grow without, you know, having your overhead trail a little bit, right? But there's ways to manage it and ways to kind of keep within those confines of what you really need to look at in order to bring home the income that you want. Yeah.
So, at what point did you notice that the overhead expenses were out of control, a little bit higher than they should have been, and it wasn't translating into your take-home income either?
I mean, you notice it when it doesn't translate into your take-home income, right? Right away. That's a painful reminder every 2 weeks, right? But I didn't really care, nor did I think that was a problem at the time. One, because my living expenses were so low at the time, and I knew if I can just grow this thing to X, I didn't even really have an idea about what X was. I just wanted to be a $2 million practice, so whatever it was, right? You know, I thought that's what I need to do. And we did it, but I didn't really realize it until I was so busy doing dentistry. I had a hard time figuring out how to manage all the other admin tasks. Jennifer came in and helped with some of those. I was still holding on to a lot of the financial things or the writing protocol parts, writing systems, things like that. So, I mean, I was, it became a, when the day ended, my day did not end. And that's for a lot of people. So I was still, up, every night writing these things or mornings or days off or whatever it was. And then doing QuickBooks or doing these other things, working with the accountant for bookkeeping, things like that. So I really didn't realize it until I finally realized that I needed help, and I hired a bookkeeper. And we had someone come in, I think just a couple days a week. She came in for 2 or 3 hours and started having some serious conversations with me about what we're really able to pay and not able to pay. And that's when I think it kind of hit home a little bit is, okay, we're making payroll, we're paying all our bills, we're paying all our loans, we're paying all our rents. That's not a problem. We got a couple people we're stretching out a little bit. But by the way, we haven't paid you in a while, Dr. Erickson. And all these other things. So I'm watching this production. I'm producing a ton. I mean, just a ton for a second year out grad. And I didn't realize that if I was going to keep on that trajectory, I better do something about the overhead, because if I didn't, that was going to be harder and harder to reverse. And so then that's when it kind of really hit home. And it took a while. And Jennifer, I mean, it's something we're constantly working on. But it's, that's when I kind of realized, when I had a second set of eyes on it to really look at that. Because I mean, we're looking at, when your CPA kind of looks at it, it's all forensic, right? Your CPA is never looking at things in real time. It's a historical outlook, right? A CFO is a forward-looking, should be forward-looking. A CPA is looking in the rearview mirror. So, that one, and a bookkeeper to some extent too is a little bit that way. So, they can kind of plan out bills and things like that too, which is forward-looking. But when I started hearing that we're stretching a couple of people out, that I'm not being paid, that, oh yeah, this is a problem. When you grow, you should also see some success yourself. Those are hard conversations, and it kind of explaining why. And if I'm saying, hey, I'm making a play to grow the value of the business or something like that, well, that's fine, but no one's going to buy a business that's not profitable. And so, I mean, that was kind of a tough, realization for me, right? Yeah, I can produce, no doubt about it. Can you run an efficient business though? That's a whole another aspect too. That took me a little bit of time to figure out. Painful time.
That was going to be one of my first questions, is even when some of those first conversations happened about, overhead expenses are out of control, or, we're getting behind on AP, what was your first solution to that right off the bat?
It was always, don't pay me
And produce more.
and produce more. Yeah, I mean, and that's, and I think that's the, leaders eat last type thing that I kind of took, is like, okay, I'm gonna get in here, I'm gonna do it myself, right? And if I can get in there, if I can just get one more case, if I can just do these more implants, if I can kind of, take this one more course to kind of learn things, add more tricks to my bag of tricks, and that way I'm gonna get the production up. If I can get the production up, everything will be fine. Those courses cost money, and they always come with tools and things and equipment and more courses and things like that that need to follow with them too, right? There's very few that are one and done, and then you're going to produce on Monday morning, right? There are some, but there's very few. And I think that's been one thing that we've coached our doctors really well on, is look at that course that you're going to take, and what is it going to take to actually implement that and turn the needle for you, move the needle for you.
What's the true cost of that course,
Right.
and the production that you're
What's
missing,
the
and the
true
travel?
benefit?
Yeah, that too. So, looking at systems, looking at overhead expenses that were out of control, how long did it take for you to realize that production was not the only answer, that you were not going to be able to produce your way out of it?
A lot later than I should have, that's for sure. And it's not that I never realized that, but that's, I always realized that was something I needed to watch. How strict I needed to be with it, and how, because I was extremely rigid with my clinical protocols, extremely rigid with the way I did exams and practicing and repeating it, and and writing it down, and then you know, testing one little thing, and just so, you know, basically taking the scientific method to my, the way I had my office flow, the way I did my protocols, the way I did close my cases, the way we did presentations, all these other things. We were, you know, I was extremely regimented in, and I realized that I needed to take that to the business side even more, right? And it probably should have been the other way around, honestly, but or probably should have been simultaneously, actually. But, you know, it took a lot of hard times to come to that realization, right? I was not a quick learner. Still, I'm not. But pain, tears, you know, really tough conversations. I mean, you know, we can go on and on about the different pain points, but I mean, there, you name it, I've been through it, and Jennifer's been with it through, you know, through a lot of it with me. But, you know, it's when you're having to kind of figure out how to make the next payroll, whether it's from your own money or somewhere else, something's got to change.
And that's on top of you already not taking a payroll, taking a paycheck.
Yeah. Yeah. It's on top, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So one of the strategies that came to mind was hiring an associate. How'd that work out?
I think we need to kind of clarify that a little bit too. So it did not work out to have the associate help me produce my way out of a problem, right? And I think that is what we see time and time again. We're actually in negotiations with another office right now where the guy thinks he's going to do the exact same thing, is have an associate to help him produce his way out of a huge problem right now. And you know, there was definitely that thought in my mind here. I'm going to hire this person. They're only going to come in 2 or 3 days a week. They're going to produce X. I'm going to produce what I've already produced right here. A plus B equals I'm good, right? And that doesn't work, right? It doesn't work that way, because A plus B also has C amount of overhead and training and managing another person and their inefficiencies or their bad habits or whatever else that might not drive with your office culture, with your office systems, things like that. So the way I actually hired an associate, though, I do not regret that part of it, because the way I hired it was a little bit different than a lot of people hire. I hired an associate to allow me to produce more instead of hiring an associate to add to my production. Does that make sense? So where I got in a little bit of a situation was there's not enough hours in the day. I could not produce any more in my time, and I was producing a ton of time. But I forget what the exact numbers are, but, you know, it basically did not, it wasn't worth my while to sit down for any less than what, $1,200, $1,500 an hour, something like that. And when I did, when I had a, you know, a couple of fillings on the schedule or some things like that, I literally had to put them like in a second or third column. You know, we already had like a sedation case going, another seed, and this was like a third case. So I was doing like three things at one time. And I realized that that's not a sustainable strategy, right? That's not a sustainable strategy for quality dentistry. That's not a sustainable strategy for keeping my mind sane. That's not keeping my body healthy, keeping my team, or, you know, excited. I mean, that you're just going to run them ragged. And I did. So I hired the associate to take away the single crowns, double crowns, quad composites, night guards, seats, things like that, that weren't enough for me to make sense to produce. And what that did was allow me to add more of those bigger cases. And I did see, I saw my hourly go up, which was nice. There was some efficiency issues because I did pay that person on a per diem. So they were not motivated to take anything more, but I did that on purpose because I was essentially treatment planning things and putting them on her schedule. I never wanted that person to feel like they were just getting the slop.
Right.
And so I knew I needed that person as kind of a, you know, a sidecar to kind of back me up. And if I needed cases, things like that. So it really worked well when I was really busy. If we had a month that kind of went down a little bit, it wasn't as effective. Luckily, there weren't too many times like that, I think, until the very end when we kind of, the practice model kind of changed a little bit. And I really was looking for an additive associate, meaning someone that could we could just do a production where we just add their production into ours. And but for the time, it definitely worked to increase my hourly. It definitely did.
So we have an associate for a little while, and you're able to increase the hourly, and we have overhead expenses obviously with the associate coming on board. And then we're realizing that maybe that wasn't the only answer that we needed here, with whether it was overhead expenses or whether it was systems. So tell me a little bit more just about that, of maybe realizing there wasn't just one solve to the situation.
Well, this I'm still learning this lesson. So, it's yeah, it's it can never be just overhead. I mean, there's kind of typical versions of a lot of different doctors, right? You have clinical doctors that are just focused on the whatever the best is, whatever the best course, whatever the best material, whatever the best assistant, whatever the best, I need the best at all times. It's clinical, 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 right? These are your dental school teachers that happen to own a practice, right? Generally smaller shops, generally high overhead, right? Because high things, expensive things, nice things cost more money. You have the doctors that think that just building relationships, kind of social doc, like people that are just going to go and they're the ones that are going to be the members of all these different clubs and things like that. And that was me for a while too. They're the top line producers, right? They're the ones that think all I have to do is produce my way out of a problem. And if I can just, get more new patients, get more cases on the schedule, get more production, get more people in, that's the way I'm going to produce. And then you have the business guys, right? And these are the guys that generally, not saying they're all business, savants, but they think that the numbers, the overhead numbers, are what is going to make them successful. And to some extent, some of them are right. To some extent, all of them are right. But the problem is a lot of times the business side have offices that are really lean, to the point where the culture can kind of suffer a little bit. It is really lean from a, materials, equipment, even team. Sometimes they're pinching pennies. They're constantly talking about production or overhead, or having their team have really, really tight budgets all the time. Everyone has a number to manage type thing. And sometimes that can get a little wearing. And so what we realized, kind of quickly, although it was definitely a gradient, was we really need to be all these different hats, right? You have to have a superb clinical background, a superb clinical experience and know-how. You have to be good in front of patients. You don't have to be their best friend. You don't have to go out and bake cookies for everyone walking down the street. But when you're in front of people, you need to have good bedside manner, for lack of a better term, right? And you need to be that social doc too. And you absolutely need to have an awareness of overhead and training and team training and hiring and the business side too. So if you're any one of those alone, you're gonna have problems. I think probably admittedly, I definitely was more of that kind of social produce doc with a little bit of a mixture of a clinical. And when I started to kind of learn, really get clear on my goals, my overhead goals, my production goals, my hourly goals, what I needed for my associate to produce if I was going to keep her on, for example, and make it worthwhile, because there does come a team. A doctor needs an assistant, right? The assistant's got money. And so, it's when I started to kind of learn all those things and how those things kind of played into each other, and how I needed to be a combination of all of them, I think it's really when it started to make sense to me. So, and we started to see the results.
And that is why we are starting this series, to talk about, the different puzzle pieces that all have to fit here, have to be built on each other to make sure that you have your team growing in the right direction. And it starts with really understanding where you need to be from a goal standpoint and why are you doing those things. So that is where we're going to be picking up on this topic next week. We're going to talk about some of those overhead expenses and starting with our why to get your team and your doctors growing in that direction, that yes, we're all working towards a number, but why are we working towards that number? Sam, thank you for sharing some of the background and kind of how we got to this point, and being vulnerable about some of these past PTSD painful points in history, but it helps build you where you are.
It's what you know makes everyone though. It's kind of the history, you know. If we, you know, we have to learn from all these different things, and it's what makes us.
So come back next week where we'll be talking on the second part of the series and this topic. If you want to connect with us in the meantime, you can reach out. I reshoot that. Hold on. Hold the phone. Lost my cheese, please. Okay. If you want to connect with us in the meantime, you can reach out. Our email is connect@pathwaydentalsolutions.com or through our website, pathwaydentalsolutions.com. We're also on all of the social platforms, so please feel free to connect with us. If you want to learn more about how we can help you set up these systems, we do this for our private clients, and we would be happy to help you as well. But in the meantime, we will look forward to seeing you for part two next week.
All right, guys. Bye, guys.
Bye.